Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today is a super duper edition of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox as we explore the topic of marijuana rights with two activists. One is one of the most famous pot activists of all time, Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong fame. Tommy will be on in a few minutes, but our first guest is Misha Irizarry, who does local work for pot rights on the San Francisco Marijuana Offenses Oversight Committee, MOOC. Misha also lost her son, Idris Deli, to blue-on-brown cop violence several years ago. Misha, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you so much, Cindy.
It's great to finally have you on. As I was telling my listeners, you do a lot of work for justice and social justice in San Francisco, my old town, when I ran against Nancy Pelosi in 2008. You were also a supporter of my campaign, and we were really grateful for that.
Hey, it's a great honor and privilege to be on your show today. Yeah, I'm on the Marijuana Offenses Overview Committee in San Francisco since September 08. That enforces and monitors the lowest priority ordinance for SFPD because ever since June 07, the police here in San Francisco is not supposed to arrest, detain, admonish, or send to incarceration people who are smoking marijuana, whether or not they are medical patients. Just for marijuana as the first offense. Actually, you know, this is one of the most secret, most hidden law in the city, that anybody actually can smoke weed on the street as long as they are 20 feet away from a public building entrance, and people can have on them up to 1/8 of an ounce of dry weed, as long as it's not packaged individually for sale. And people can grow up to 25 plants in separate pots so that they don't germinate with each other at home for their own consumption. I don't even smoke the stuff, Cindy, but I believe in defending people's rights.
Even if you have a card or a prescription, if you don't have a card or prescription, you can
smoke. That's right. I mean, that law, the lowest priority ordinance, is in place not only for medical patients, but what we used to call recreational users, or adult users, as we call them now.
Well, that explains a lot to me with some people I know that have said, wow, a cop walked right by me, or a cop drove right by me when I was smoking weed and they didn't do anything. So I know San Francisco is a very friendly city. I mean, my office was right next to a dispensary, but we still do have federal agents raiding our dispensaries, don't we?
Yeah, and hopefully this is setting, you know, it's a pilot project that is setting up a model for the country. But the police has been cooperating with the lowest priority ordinance up to a point, ever since Gascon became the chief of police in San Francisco.
Right.
My own belief is that Gascon is a federal, was imposed by the feds, because they just raided Denis Perron. Denis Perron is a marijuana activist in San Francisco.
Right.
So, you know, we collect citizen complaints or residents' complaints about violation of the lowest priority ordinance perpetrated by the San Francisco Police Department, and we help people get pro bono attorneys to win their case.
So you're like a go-between between the community and the police department.
Right.
Right.
You also know Greg Ledbetter, who is a part of Axis of Love with Shauna Goshenal, and we are both co-chairs of the Black and Brown Just Drug Policy, which is a cannabis justice entity, and beyond cannabis, just addressing the racial disparity between white people and poor people of color when it comes to drug enforcement. And I must say that LEAP, I don't know if you heard, I believe it's law enforcement against prohibition. Jack Paul is the national director. They have been challenging that disparity for the longest time. So we do have allies within law enforcement to challenge how racist and how classist the war on drug is.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the whole law enforcement community, as you well know, is very biased against black and brown people, unfortunately. Tell my listeners what you think about Proposition 19 in California.
That is being pushed by Tom Amiano, and I think that is definitely going to pass. And, I'm also in favor of seeing taxation of marijuana, taxation of the growers, and encouraging them to start cooperative to provide the dispensaries with medical marijuana and to be taxed. Oakland took the lead on this. All the cooperative in Oakland have accepted to be taxable, and we need to follow their lead.
And, of course, it will. I think it will help the community. And my next guest, Tommy Chong, you know, we're going to talk about hemp, too, and about how hemp can save the world.
Yes.
So we're all in favor of that on Cindy Sheehan's soapbox.
It is enough already with the mad reefer, you know, mythology. We all know that people who smoke weed do not commit violent crimes. Okay.
Right.
The violent crimes that are drug-related usually link people to cocaine, to methamphetamine, but not weed. So enough of that already. If alcohol is legal and that is doing way more ravages than weed, it is time already to not only decriminalize but legalize weed. We have a formidable ally in San Francisco in James Keyes, who, I don't know if you met James, Cindy, who has been supportive of Access of Love and legalization of marijuana for the longest time. He is the chair of the Board of Mental Health in San Francisco, and he's running for District 6 as a candidate supervisor. And he's right along with us pushing for legalization.
And I saw that Chris Daley, who's terming out, actually just endorsed James Keyes to take his
seat. He just endorsed him yesterday.
Well, Misha,
he will be actually the first black male elected at the Board of Supervisors in the history of San Francisco. So, you know, we have a powerful ally with them.
So, Misha, we're unfortunately out of time.
Okay, bye-bye, Cindy.
Okay, bye-bye, Misha. That was our guest, Misha Irizarry. Stay tuned. Our next guest is Tommy Chong.
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
I think we're parked, man.
Of course, that clip was from Cheech and Chong's seminal stoner movie, Up in Smoke. Tommy Chong is not just a brilliant comedian, musician, and actor. He has spent a lifetime advocating for pot rights. He did 9 months in federal private prison for illegal persecution from the Bush administration. His legal problems are detailed in a great documentary called AKA Tommy Chong. Welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, thank you, Cindy, and it's nice being here.
I'm sure you hear this 1,000 times a day, but I just want to let you know how much you've meant in my life for a long, long time, you know, from making us laugh to showing us what an example of integrity and bravery that you showed when you were persecuted by the U.S. government.
Well, you know, it was the least I could do, you know, for all the joy I had and the money we made, you know, making fun of them. It was no problem.
Well, that's one thing. You know, I am taking a principled stand against paying my income taxes because I don't want to pay for what, you know, the U.S. is doing around the world. I don't want to pay for the war machine. I pay for it my whole life, and, you know, I feel like I contributed to the death of my son and so many other people in the world. So I've just stopped paying, you know, make a principled stand against what our government does. So, you know, that the same thing that happened to you could happen to me in the future. And I saw your movie, a.k.a. Tommy Chong, and you really handled it in really a very amazing way. Can you tell my listeners who might not know what happened to you? I'm sure all my listeners do, but explain what happened to you when you were persecuted by the, really, the Bush administration persecuted you.
Yeah, well, what happened, the Bush people were in the beginning stages of getting support for their attack on Iraq,
right?
And they needed two things. They needed to do a preemptive strike against the anti-war protesters, which they anticipated would be coming out full force against their policies in Iraq and the Middle East. Period.
Right.
And so, in the meantime, I'm a pot activist or a pot comedian to begin with. And Cheech and Chong, you know, we've been around since we started in 1971,
right,
with our records. And so our views, you know, on the ridiculous nature of the drug laws were well known, well documented, and ignored for the most part, you know, by the government. But when Bush started his warmongering, they needed to deflect, you know, the public's attention. And so what they did, they came up with this Operation Pipe Dreams,
right,
which was a preemptive attack on the glass water pipe industry, which was growing huge. It was getting very big.
And you were involved in a company with your son.
Yeah. Yeah, well, making a long story even longer, when we were on the road, my wife and I were doing comedy, and we were finding that people were bootlegging, bongs made with my name on it, you know, Chong bongs. And so my wife and I decided, well, you know, hey, this would be a good business for my son to get into. He was looking for something. And so he started a bong business using my name. And it was legal, you know, everything totally legal, above board. You know, we had we had licenses, you know, from the city, from the state, to operate our glass business. But when the Bush people came in, they found a loophole in the law, which was a paraphernalia law, which was really designed for crack pipe users, for people using methamphetamine, which, by the way, that was their little way of getting around, public sentiment, you know, because everybody's against, you know, heroin, they're against methamphetamine, but marijuana, because it's a medicine, you know, and we've proven to be an effective medicine,
right,
you know, the Bush and everybody else like to lump everything together so they can use a methamphetamine law, you know, to come after the marijuana users, and which they did, and that's what they did with me. And so
ironic name for a president that's going after marijuana advocates, right?
Yeah, well, Bush himself, you know, he's really was a recovered addict, you know, alcoholic, and in his case, pot really was a gateway drug, you know, whether he used it or not, you know, but he was more of a cokehead. But more than anything, what the Bush people did, you know, by coming after me the way they did, because what they found out is that they had no legal recourse with me. I had not broken any law. In fact, all I did was exercise my free speech right, and you know, my second amendment, not my second, but my free speech, right of free speech,
mm-hmm,
and expression. Because I didn't, you know, physically own anything. I didn't own the bong company. I didn't make the glass. I just represented mm-hmm. them. And so what they did, they came after my son and my wife, because my wife had signed a check for the mm-hmm. business, and so that implicated her. And then my son was, you know, the business was in his name, which implicated him. And so they threatened both my son and my wife with significant jail time if I didn't plead guilty and perjure myself. And so I did. I pled guilty. I perjured myself, you know, because I had to swear in front of a judge, a federal judge, and which is very ironic because most federal convictions now are for lying to federal officials.
Amazing.
And here's a representative of the court,
right.
Forcing me to perjure myself, forcing me to lie, because when he said I had a degree, you know, they listed off a series of charges and I had to plead guilty to them, and when they said that, you know, you are the owner, the sole owner, this is what they said, you are the sole owner of the enterprise, Nice Dreams, and I automatically said no, that's not true. And so they had to stop the proceedings, and then they had a little meeting. And then my lawyer stood up and says, Your Honor, yes, he represents, he is, he changes that line to that, yes, he is a sole owner of this establishment. And it was the weirdest thing. And then they promised me that I wouldn't get any jail time. And they lied.
Well, yeah, how long did you spend in prison?
They sentenced me to 9 months in federal lockup.
And if I'd just like to really recommend the movie about this, a documentary called AKA Tommy Chong, because it really goes into a lot more depth about your story. And that's where I found my inspiration, was watching that movie, because you did. You really made the best out of a bad situation, and that is,
well,
to me,
yeah,
is so admirable.
What I did. I just retreated. You know, when I found myself facing the inevitable, which was jail time, mm-hmm. because what happens, you know, the lawyers always give you hope. You know, they always give you this. By the way, defense lawyers, their main job is to give you an excuse of why you shouldn't be in there. That's
mm-hmm.
about it. You know,
right,
they give
right.
you an excuse of what to say while you're incarcerated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did, I immediately, I looked at it like I'm a writer. I'm being embedded with the troops.
Right.
And that's what I call them, because I am a writer. I wrote a book. Wrote two books mm-hmm. while I was in there. And you know, we did the film, but what I did, you know what I did, Cindy, that was I really got into the I Ching, you know, the
mm-hmm.
Book of Changes,
and
I started reading all sorts of religious or spiritual books, and Buddhism. I studied all the religions, and I really connected with my. You know, my real self, and so I used it as a retreat, in a like a religious retreat. You know, I just even told myself that I'm here. You know, and now I got a chance to really just get into myself. You know, not worried about anybody else. I just had to
uh-huh.
get into where I was and you know, to really ask myself a lot of questions about what I was doing and what, you know, what's going on in the world. And it really helped me. It really helped me. And I helped other people while I was there. And
that's
really good about it.
Well, what I've just spent, you know, I've been arrested about 14 or 15 times now. The longest I've ever spent in jail is 52 hours. And I even counted the hours and it was miserable. But you do also connect with people who have been persecuted and oppressed for so long here, that, you know, in the world, in this nation, it makes you have an appreciation for what, you know, the the oppressed classes have been going through for so long.
Yeah. You would really understand it. You know, the first thing you do when you're driving, you know, if you haven't been to prison, you avoid. I notice people avoid people that have, you know, fallen on hard times. You know, like when you're driving by and you see the prisoners out working on the road with the orange jumpsuit. You know, I found myself looking away, like I don't want to get it with the same brush. And, you know, that was before. And then when you go to prisons or when you drive by prisons, you tend to look at the uniform. You don't tend to look at the face or to see the person behind, you know, in that uniform or in that, you know, that that costume. And so what happens when you do, when you do end up behind bars, you change and you become one of them. And then you really see how little you count, you know. And that's what they do. They dehumanize you. That's what the government wants to do with their opponents, you know, because that's what they're doing. You know, they're not jailing criminals. They're just
their opponent.
It's all a political hustle for these guys.
Well, we know that the prison industrial complex is almost comparable to the military-industrial complex and very connected in this country. And most of the people who are in, you know, populating our prisons are in there for marijuana convictions. And the government spent $12 million on this project to...
$12 million. I mean, that's just a drop in the bucket. Compared to
what they
spend. And the thing is, you know, what people don't realize is that the prison I was in was privately owned.
Oh, so it was...
Privately owned. I mean, there's a security company called Wackenhut.
I'm familiar.
It's owned, I think the headquarters is in Denmark or Germany. And then the jail I was in, it was once owned by Wackenhut, and then they changed the name, I think twice when I was in there. It was called GEO now, G-E-O. And the reason they do that is to avoid the lawsuits. You see, so you got no recourse. And once you get in the system, the federal government pays these guys to run their prisons for them. And so you're not even in a federal, you're not even being watched by, like, your government. You think you are, but you're not. It's a privately owned business that saves money if they feed you inferior food, saves money if they don't give the prisoners a proper medical or education. So it's such a scam, you know.
Well, and profit is the motive, and in California, at least, we used to have where, rehabilitation was the goal, but now it's punitive. It's strictly punitive, and so there's a high rate of recidivism? In our prison system. But let's talk about, speaking of California, I'm a Californian, and we do have a proposition coming up on November's ballot, Prop 19, to legalize marijuana, but actually to give local governments power of taxation and regulation and things like that. What are your views on Proposition 19?
Personally, the more laws you can get rid of, you know, the better. And the thing is, you know, the government will try to tax it or whatever, but you know, you got to remember that marijuana is a weed. It grows anywhere for anybody under any circumstances, and so once they legalize it and take away the criminal penalties for possession and cultivation, then we're going to see an industry blossom that's going to save the world. So I really like the fact that we're getting it legalized.
Well, we have a situation here in California, too, that we do have laws on the books that are that it's legal to use for, you know, compassionate uses, and it is medicine, like you said. But many people who get their prescriptions are still persecuted by the federal government, doctors, dispensaries.
Because on one hand they say it's legal statewide, but
right.
then the federal says it's still a Schedule I narcotic, which has no medical value whatsoever. And it also allows, you see, it's a worldwide epidemic that that the government has got themselves into. You know, wars have been created. And by the way, it's the oil companies that's behind all of this.
Right, right.
You know, starting with the DuPont petrol industry that wanted the hemp rope and the hemp fabric off the market, so that they could have a clear market to, you know, to manufacture and sell their plastic products.
Right.
And so that really was the genesis to get pot illegal to begin with. You know, to get the hemp plant, which is the marijuana plant.
Right,
and then
right.
the side thing, you know, for the government was the fact that people like to be intoxicated, you know, like they like to drink their beer, they like to, you know, so prohibition didn't work, and
right.
then they demonized marijuana, you know, which was hemp or cannabis, and they call it marijuana so they could demonize it and make it a racial issue, which they did. And which they still do, and that's the problem with the law the way it is. So getting back to the original question, you know, because I know there are people, you know, pro pot people that don't want it legal. They don't want it legal. You know,
right.
they're trying to say that, you know, the government or the big businesses will take it over. Well, good. You know, at least they'll be selling something that's, you know, that's helping the public, you know, instead of poisoning the public. And,
right,
and
I live in Oakland.
You know the greatest thing about pot is, Cindy, is that
right.
you don't have to smoke it.
Right.
You don't have to take it. If you don't want it, if you don't like it for any reason, you don't have to take it. Whereas cigarettes, you get addicted. Alcohol, you get addicted. Painkillers,
right.
you get addicted. You know, anything, opium-based medicine, you get addicted. Marijuana, non-addicting.
Well, I'm all for either, you know, decriminalization, legalization. And like you said, hemp can save the world. It can be an energy. You know, we can use it for clean energy instead of the fossil fuels that are destroying our planet.
Seven to one, the ratio is the, you know, it takes, it produces seven times for what, you know, for every energy you get seven times back. Corn, you get four times. It's 4 to 1.
Right.
Yeah, marijuana or hemp, 7 to 1. And
yeah,
it takes
corn is not a good fuel. It's not a good replacement for fuel. Besides, it's food. People need to eat it. They don't need to be putting it in their gas tanks.
Yeah, and burning thing. But the thing is, what we're going to do, what we're looking at now is electricity. You know, plug-in cars are going to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so hemp has to take over where the plastics failed, you know, because the plastic plants, they got huge plastic plants all over the country that's, you know, killing people, you know, polluting the environment and killing people for a substance to wrap your food in. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, the amount of energy that they spend, you know, producing plastic, which kills people. And use the same energy to produce less energy and to produce hemp, and you're saving people. But there's
a
biblical thing, Cindy, that we have to remember. There's a biblical saying that is coming true. It says, "The meek shall inherit the earth."
Well, I hope it's about time, because the robber class has been running it for way too long now.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is, it's like Hitler's regime. You know, Hitler only lasted, 10 years, if that, you know, and the last few years he was on the run, you know. So the Bush and all the rest of those people, you know, they're history. I mean, you can see it right now, you know. But, I mean, their big guns is Sarah Palin, you know.
Unfortunately, the policy still continues, so we still have to keep our work going to have a sustainable future for our children and our grandchildren that we were talking about before we started this show. But unfortunately, we're out of time, Tommy, and I said, I'm very honored that you came on the show, and I want to encourage my listeners to check out the film, a.k.a. Tommy Chong. But is there something else that they can go to get more information about what we've been talking about?
CheechandChong.com is up, and my own profile, Tommy Chong. So any of the Chongs, you get us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for your lifelong work and for keeping at it, and really for your dignity in the face of just such adversity. We really appreciate it.
And call me anytime if you need something, babe.
Oh, awesome. We'll work on these things together. We'll
take
talk
care.
To you soon, Tommy. That was our very special guest, Tommy Chong. I hope you enjoyed this week's show. I know I did. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Petty, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, and my producer, Mikey, my guest, and you for listening.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. Sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value. Chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.